So, representational systems. Now, rep systems, or sometimes known as modalities, because obviously we have submodalities, which are the finer distinctions of the modalities. There are really four main modalities that we utilize in NLP, which are, shout them out loudly so I can hear you all. Visual, yes. Auditory, kinesthetic, and AD, yes. Olfactory and gustatory are there, but to a lesser extent, because they're we as human beings don't tend to use those senses to take information in quite as much. Although we do, because, you know, we do certainly use smell and taste a lot, but not necessarily in the work that we're doing. So, why would we want to learn about the major representational systems? What's in it for us? What does it do for us? Well, if you think about it, moment by moment, everybody is making an internal representation. Everybody right in the room now is making an internal representation. You have to be. Now, even though you know you are making an internal representation, you may not be fully aware of it. It's there, and it's kind of like just somewhere there. And what we've found is that when we want to create better communication with people, that if we're able to enter their world, if you like, then what we can do is we can start to speak their language. We can start to tune in to the kind of things that they're doing inside their head. So what we do is we match our model of world with their model of world, and it gives us a greater influence on that person. So if somebody's visual, as an example, what are they doing inside? They're making pictures. So we would ourselves start to talk in pictorial language, and we'd also start to put ourselves into a visual state. We'll talk about a bit more of that in a moment. But speaking the language by painting a picture. So if we see, for example, them, you know, we'll talk about eye patterns today as well, but if we see them actually going up there, for example, then we can say, okay, so how does that look to you? Is that clearer now? So those two words are, you know, predicates that go with visual senses. But if you said to them, so how does that feel? You know, that probably wouldn't work, because you'd be completely mismatching the representational system at the moment. And also, as a communicator, it's important for me, for example, to be using as many of the representational systems as I can throughout the event, to make it as rich, as fulfilling, as colourful, and obviously as clear as it can possibly be for you out there listening to the material and soaking it all in, because that means that I'm capturing all of you at various times to give you as much, to fill as much of your model world as I can at the same time. So visual, we get language. So if it was auditory, for example, what kind of words or things might we say if someone was auditory, for example? We'd see them probably doing this. What kind of things would we say? How does that sound to you? Does that ring a bell? Yeah, what else could we use? Come on, it's quite a few. Come on, just tap into it, guys. I want to really, really have you come up with some great answers here. I hear what you say, yeah. What else? Does that resonate with you? Could be another one, yeah. Yeah, okay, good. There's a number of different ones that we can use for every auditory system. So I want you to start thinking about those things now, because we're going to be stretching you in just a very short while, with a exercise to really have you tune into these various ways that you can speak. And if it's a kinesthetic, what sort of things we can say, you know, how does that feel? So a person's eyes will be down here if they're normally organized. So how does that feel to you? What else could you say from a kinesthetic point of view? Can you grasp that? Great. Touch of the pen on the paper, yeah. Can you get in touch with that now, you could say. So there's a number of different words, again, that we can use to really enter their world. And there are obviously two main things that we're looking at. If you remember from the CDs in the test that you wrote, there are two main things that we're doing with representational systems. They are what we call the preferred representational system and the lead representational system. So let me take some time now just to explain what those two things are, to clear up any confusion. The first thing is that the lead representational system, that is the system that somebody goes to actually access information internally. first. And it may be different or indeed the same as the preferred representational system. So this is really this becomes even more important when we're eliciting strategies from IPANs. So when you're eliciting IPANs for strategies, for example, one of the things you have to do is you have to recognize if they do have a lead. So if you every time you ask them a question, if they keep going to the same place every time first, you've got to delete that because it's not part of the strategy. That's not part of the strategy, it's just their lead system. Does that make sense? So you have to take that bit off. So you've got to watch out for that. Otherwise, if you don't know about lead systems, you get very confused when you start looking at IPATNs, thinking like IPATNs don't work, for example, because like, oh, what's he going down there for? I'm asking a visual question. It's because they have a lead system first. So that's the system that they go to first to access information. It's what switches the machine on, if you like. It's what kickstarts the program off. And then we have the preferred representational system, which is the system that the person makes the most distinctions in. They make the most distinctions in. It's a system that they use most when they're under stress. And the system that they use the most. So for me, my system is, and I'm pretty integrated. My system that I don't have the most of is AD. That's the system I'm most removed from. But the system I have as my number one system is auditory. You can probably know that just from the way that I speak, because I'm quite concerned about making sure that my voice sounds resonant all the time and use my voice in a certain way, which is probably why I'm a speaker, probably, because I like that. And my second system probably is kinesthetic, and my third system is visual. And there's certain things I do at various times to switch myself on in order to present in certain ways. Because there are various times, of course, where obviously it's important for me to be in kinesthetic. So if I want to be in kinesthetic, I'll probably speak, you know, softer, slower, and a little bit more feeling in my voice. If I'm speaking auditory, which is my normal way of speaking, it's kind of high auditory, it's near visual, but it's kind of high auditory, so it's not low auditory, which would be more like this, with a little bit more rhythm in the voice, like that. It's kind of high auditory, high end of the auditory scale, which is where I normally present at. And sometimes you have me very, very visual, for example. You've seen me do it when I'm doing like demonstrations of board breaks and things like that, going to a high visual state, because you don't want to be in like a slow kinesthetic state when you're doing those things. And what I'll often do, and we'll teach you some of this stuff when you do come into my presenting passionately course, one of the things I always do is a VAK sequence whenever I start a presentation off. So, a KAV sequence, I beg your pardon. What that means is, I want to present in nearly visual state. So what I'll do is, for the kinesthetic people in the audience, what I do is I start off in kinesthetic. So I start off with a slow, resonant voice, really kind of slow, and the visual people are going like, fucking hell, get on with it. Seriously. But the kinesthetic people love it. But then because from a pace and lead point of view, what I'm doing is I've paced the kinesthetic people and I bring them with me. I start to come up, but they'll come with me. So now I'm into the auditory and pick all the auditory people up. And I go up to the visual and I pick all the visual people up, and then I'll probably just come down slightly, a little bit down to where I'm comfortable presenting. And then I can go wherever I want to and people will come with me. It's called a charismatic KAV sequence. And you want to think about doing the same things when you're talking one-to-one with people. Is think about where they're at right now. But I do a KAV sequence because I have to pick everybody up. So I always do it the same way. But if you're with somebody who you know is visual, then clearly it's important for you to step yourself up to a visual. You may not go straight there, but you can certainly get there reasonably quickly. And I only do the KAV sequence, probably take me a minute, 2 minutes, just to pick everybody else up. That's what it takes. So the preferred representational system then is the one we have the most, we use the most. Let's talk about some of the characteristics of the specific representational systems then, so that you know how to recognize these in other people and yourself really, really quickly. Because what happens is then in terms of building rapport, it becomes much easier, because what you do is you just do one big chunk. You just go like, they're more visual right now. They're in a visual state. So you just switch yourself onto visual state and everything kind of follows. Now, here's one of the things about visual people. Visual people generally, and again, this is a generalization, so there will always be exceptions to these rules, absolutely. But if you look generally speaking, visual people be into presentation of how they present themselves, because how they look's important to them. They'll be thinner and more wiry in nature than other people. So they'll be kind of smarter, tall, keep themselves kind of straight and erect in the way that they stand and hold themselves, for example. In addition to that, their voice obviously will be more higher pitched. I'm in a visual state right now, as you can hear, so to match these people. So I'm in a visual state, which means my voice is higher in the throat, it's gone a little bit deep, a little bit higher up. And the breathing is right up here in the top of the lungs, somewhere up here. So shorter breaths, so the sentences are more punchy. And I would be more neat, more tidy, more well-groomed. And in terms of memorizing information, I would memorize information much better by seeing it. You know, if you wanted to give them directions, you want to draw them a map to have them know where it was, for example. You know, if you give them verbal instructions, they've lost it after the first three things. They're like, where is it? No, it's over there, it's over there, it's over there. Oh, right, yeah. And they're trying to make a picture in their head in order to make it work. But to make it really work, for you need to draw them it. If you want them to do something, then show them how to do it. It's much better than telling them how to do it, okay? As I said previously, they'll tend to stand further back to take you all in. So they'll want to, you know, be slightly further back from you. Not, you know, not so far back, but slightly further back. Who was it I was speaking to yesterday? Where's the gentleman I was speaking to? Yesterday, yes, of course. We were talking yesterday, and he gave me a good heads up. He said, like, one of the things to notice when you're out of rapport with somebody who's visual, is it, I've forgotten your name, sir. David, of course. David said that what he tends to do is when he's in too close to somebody, for example, and because he wants to take all of me, and what he'll do is he'll actually lean his head back, and he'll actually have to do that because this is too close. So in order to take more people in, you actually see him doing this and looking back. So that's a good indicator to know you're with a visual person and you're in too close. When you see that person leaning back away from you, it's because you're in too close and they can't take you all in. It's too much. Okay, let's talk about auditory now then. So auditory, and there are less, that's correct, there are less people auditory than any other representational system you'll find. Although I am one, interestingly enough, but we all see the eye pattern. Obviously, eye pattern for visual people is, you know, across the top. And auditory people, the eyes will go from side to side, so you'll see a side-to-side pattern or just staring defocused out ahead because they go defocused so they don't take in the visual so that they then go inside and listen to the sound. Breathing from the mid of the chest here, and they're easily distracted by noise. Noise easily distracts them. So if there was a little, like, you know, whirring or anything going on in the room right now, they begin to notice that. They're very good at remembering what you said. So they can repeat exactly what you said 3 weeks ago, word for word. And of course, the visual people have no clue what they said last week. They can only remember what it looked like. They just remember how your face looks at that disgusted last week when you had that particular look on your face. So they generally speaking like talking, so they'll be happy to talk on the phone, for example, although it's a bit of a sweeping generalization because, again, ladies tend to talk more on the phone than men anyway, so there's other stuff in there about that as well. They're into listening to music, and they like melodies and things that have a rhythm to them or a beat. And what you'll do is, oftentimes you'll see a head tilt with these people, as if almost like they're lending you their ear when they're talking. So they'll tend to have a more of an angled head like this, whereas the visual people is definitely square on the shoulders like that. Definitely everything square and like that for visual people. They learn things best. Certainly, one of the things why, you know, I'm able to listen, go to seminars, for example, remember exactly what a whole 4-day seminar, what was said, and like I'm able to repeat it and then like come out and deliver a similar seminar myself, because I'm very good at remembering what people said, but not just what they said, how they say the words. So it was very useful for me when I was modeling Tony Robbins. It was really easy. I just went and saw him and I remembered how to do it all, you know, and just went out there and practiced it and became him for about 2 years while I was practicing. Which is useful because you lean on models, you know, when you're out there. The first thing you want to do, and some of you will do this as well, is that if you become trainers, there's every possibility you end up doing, being like a little Andy Harrington for a while until your own little character develops. It's interesting because when I do my NLP trainings, I tend to train a bit more like David Shepherd than I do Tony Robbins, because I learned my NLP stuff from David Shepherd, so I have more of those qualities here than I do Tony Robbins kind of stuff. But then when I do my FYD seminars, it's more like Tony Robbins. So we learn best by steps, step by steps, procedures and sequences. That's when they learn best. Very, very, very sensitive to voice tonalities. I can tell when Emma has a challenge just by a slight difference in her voice tonality. Even on the telephone, I can tell if there's something wrong, just pick it up straight away. And they like the sound of their own voice, obviously. Now, auditory people don't tend to have any real kind of physiology that marks them out. They're kind of in between the two. So let's look at the kinesthetic people then. Kinesthetic people, when they're in stress, will tend to go into submissive, what we call placator. We don't use this one much in training because it basically says, help me. So kinesthetic people then, eyes tend to be down, specifically from an eye pattern point of view. If you're normally organized, you'll see this pattern down there. So feelings are down here. The voice is lower, softer, more pauses, slower. And the breathing is much, much fuller and right down, dear, it down here in the pit of the stomach. They like to touch, so they get a lot of touch, and they certainly like to be touched as well, so they get a lot of like being the physical rewards, for example, a pat or a touch or something like that, or a stroke. They got a lot of that. These are the people when you hug, they hang on in there for hugs, just a little bit longer. These are the people when you shake hands, they come over and put the other hand on top. Extra hand coming on top, for example. So extra information for them. Like to get in close, and in terms of giving them instructions and wanting to show them something or get them to do something, they want you to do it with them. Digital people, AD, like to talk to themselves inside their head all day. And night. And there's a tension here in the jaw. They keep clenching their jaw together the whole time, because being an AD is it's a very rigid, very tense physiology, yeah, with AD, yeah? There's a lot of tension involved, because you're all day, you're working hard with your conscious mind, you never let go, it's all you're hanging on the whole time, trying to grasp it and understand it the whole time. It's a very intense physiology to be in. You're the very person's quite intense in terms of, not necessarily outside, but inside. There's lots of tension going on inside the whole time. They like to make sense of things in the world. Very analytical, very logical, Dr. Spock types. You know, emotions are secondary to understanding things and thinking. So they tend to be more dissociated people by nature. They've dissociated from their emotions. They're into systems much more than anything else. And a thing about AD is actually, by itself, it is a learnt system, because nobody comes into the world AD. Nobody. Because you don't have language. You learn it. What happens is, and this is a generalization, so it's not true of everybody, but my hallucination is, and my experience tells me, that a lot of people become AD as a as a strategy to not be in their emotions. Does that make sense? Yes? And so they go into the computer world. Become very, most people who are in AD are into systems or computers or something like that, something of that nature, or they've chosen to become very AD because it's a way of disconnecting from our emotions. It's a good way, in some ways it's good, because you're out of your emotions when it's bad stuff. But of course, you lose on the upside as well, because you're disconnected from all the good emotions as well. So there's kind of like a bit of a dead zone there. So that's all the systems,